Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. On this week's show, we're going to look at the challenge of digital transformation for community banks, credit unions, and smaller operators across the United States. Obviously, we've been watching the trends and see that there's a fair bit of consolidation in the U.S. market from its peak of around 14,000 financial institutions, which includes, chartered banks, savings and loans organizations, credit unions, and so forth, from a few years ago to about half of that today. But of course, one of the big challenges is also around how these long-term community banks that have been a big part of community stay relevant in the digital age. Joining me on the show this week as co-host is our regular and a senior contributor at Forbes and the brains behind the FinTech Snark Tank, Ron Shevlin.
Hey, Brett. Good to be here.
Okay. So, Ron, in terms of the data, when we look at sort of basic digital competency and digital account opening and so forth, when it comes to, say, just like a basic function, like being able to open a bank account on a mobile phone, where would you assess U.S. banks are at in that cycle?
Well, in terms of what, the ability to do it all in terms of digital or...
Yeah, like being able to open an account end-to-end.
Performing. Yeah, I think that you'd be surprised that a lot more banks than you think actually in credit unions. You got to work them into the conversation as well. If we want to kind of lump them in, they won't like that, but we should, because they're probably further along than the community banks are. But, I think there's a lot more, and it's hard for me to judge in terms of the numbers because I don't have it in front of me. But a lot more have it than you would think have it. But the problem is that they still have policies that force the consumer, their customers or members, whatever, to go into the branch to sign for whatever reasons they have. And most of them, of course, are risk related or regulatory related. And so they're not seeing the results that they think that they might like to get or see that because of that policy. Interestingly, I did a survey a couple of months ago of banks and credit unions around their digital transformation efforts. And I don't know the number in front of me, Brett, but it was a pretty large percentage who said that they had the ability to open up checking accounts within minutes. And yet, when we actually look at the data of what percentage of total deposit accounts are being opened online in the Cornerstone Performance Report benchmarks, those percentages are in the single digits. And so there's a huge disconnect between what the banks and credit unions say they can do and what's actually happening.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's explore that. So what we'd like to do is introduce our panel and contributors for today. We have Ed joining us from the American Bankers Association. Ed?
Good afternoon, Brett. Glad to be here. Thanks so much.
What is your title at ABA?
I'm the Vice President of Endorsed Solutions at ABA.
Endorsed Solutions, great. And we have Tracy Dunlap from Zenmonix.
Yes, hello, Brett. Tracy Dunlap with Zenmonix, and I'm responsible for the design and experience team working with the customers and the product development teams to bring those experiences to the customer for digital banking.
And also from Zenmonix, we have LG Thulasidharan. Oh, there you go.
Brett, it's good to be on the session today. Thank you so much, Brett. And good to hear your voice pronouncing my name. So LG is good.
I've made a shot. LG is good. All right. Yes. All right, good. Now, Ed, you act as obviously a partner for many banks across the United States. First of all, tell us a bit about ABA and tell us a bit about the unit you work with that's trying to help digitization for community banks across the United States.
Sure. Thanks, Brett. Be happy to. So the American Bankers Association is the largest banking trade group in the U.S. We serve only banks, so credit unions don't fit in under our charter. We spend a lot of effort, obviously, on legislation, regulatory reform, trying to advance the interests of America's banks, both large and small. We do this through, obviously, lots of lobbying on Capitol Hill, which certainly is a popular topic these days. Within ABA is a unit known as Endorsed Solutions, where I work. And we have about 8 folks on the team who are subject matter experts across a range of areas. Mine happens to be payments and operations. We cover lots of different subject matters, product areas, verticals, you name it, from lending, digital lending, core processing, payments operations, debit, prepaid, digital account opening, as the case may be. So lots of different areas that we cover, and we keep a cadence up of evaluating the players, the providers in those various verticals, so that we can make recommendations to our members. As part of that process, from time to time, we will identify a company, a provider that we think is exceptional, and we will endorse that organization, give them the ABA stamp of approval, and that is something that Zenmonics earned a couple of years ago.
And so how many member banks do you guys have?
Well, oddly enough, that's one of those things we do tend to keep kind of secret.
Well,
it's an odd sort of thing. And one of the reasons is that the organization of banks, you know, charters versus actual individual banks, tends to be kind of confusing. So we have 90% of the bank charters in the country as members of ABA.
90% of the chartered banks.
Correct.
Okay, so we could guess at the number, but that's still it's still you've got a large representation. So, why did you guys start down this Endorsed Solutions? Is that what you call it?
That's correct.
Why did you start down this path of the Endorsed Solutions for your members?
We have a couple of different committees and councils, as you might guess, in a big organization like ABA, and they're made up of bankers from around the country, and they give us sort of some guide rails, right? Whether they be product ideas, service ideas, what have you, they ask us to evaluate different areas to make recommendations. So these folks came to us a number of years back and said, we really need to look at, for in this case, the digital account opening space, right? Being able to open a bank account from a mobile phone. So that is typically how we start these engagements, basically guidance from our members on these committees that tell us where they want us to put our efforts. And so that was one that we engaged in starting in 2017.
Can you sort of put your finger on why it was that this issue became more important? Why did it sort of become a topic that the banks were saying they needed it more often?
Sure. And it was a combination thing. It was banks as well as staff of an ABA sort of recognizing that, you know, people's lives, banking in particular, and other things that we do really have settled into the platform of our smartphones. You know, we just go about your daily life and look at what everybody's doing. They're all looking at their phones, whether they're making dinner reservations, travel arrangements, getting a date, getting a ride, whatever the case may be, banking. Folks are on their phones. And so to have the opportunity to give banks some guidance into the best way to go about being in that space for account opening, right? Because we recognize that the folks bank on their phones and do everything else on their phones, eventually, now, they're going to want to open accounts on their phone. And as Ron mentioned earlier, we're lagging in that area. So that was, you know, sort of job number one was to identify the best provider in that space.
Now, when we started this process, you know, as MOVIN back in 2011, 2012 in the U.S., you know, one of the issues we had, and that's, you know, getting close on to 10 years ago now, but one of the issues we had, because we were the first to offer mobile in-app account opening back in those days, we had regulatory pushback against wet signature. Are we really sort of done with that, or is there still some sort of legacy thinking around that at a state level?
You know, you put it pretty well there. Legacy thinking, I think, is a pretty apt description. We are pretty well past the need for a wet signature, but I'm not sure that the comfort level with that presumption, that's not quite the right word, that reality, that comfort level hasn't quite made its way through the banking community quite to the degree we want. Certainly, Tracy, with lots more interactions with banks in that regard, can speak more accurately to that. But I do think it's legacy thinking that's kind of got us where we are, Brett.
Okay. So, Tracy, let's bring you into the conversation. How did you guys get started in this partnership with the ABA, with the Endorse Solutions side of things?
Absolutely. So as we bring our platform to market, which is a digital platform, we recognize that really one of the starting points to that is the account opening step, that onboarding step for a customer. And as we were looking at taking our product out to the market and we were installing, we had some really strong success stories. And we were able to work with the ABA to promote those and to really look at what it takes to get past those legacy obstacles, right? And to have the proof points to talk through those. For example, things like, you know, do you really need a signature card? Do you really need to ask some of the questions in such a direct way? Can those be done through automation? And we were able to partner up with the ABA to not only talk through those general customer experience challenges, but also that strength of the ABA with the compliance component and really bring that compliance into the mix, because that's often the largest, as you said, obstacle to get past. Do I need the signature? What happens to my bank secrecy questions, my anti-money laundering questions, all of those pieces? You know, it's a change in thinking. So we worked very closely with Ed and the team at the ABA to really get out into those member banks and talk about their challenges and really determine what the best approach was to correct that thinking and take them to the next level.
At the stage of implementation, did you find yourself having to engage with regulators as well to give them some level of comfort around the fact that this was just as secure or just as robust at actually being able to identify a customer, which is the regulatory hurdle that we need to meet for account opening?
100% yes. We've spent a lot of time, and Ed knows this. Ed has pulled me into many regulatory conferences, which sometimes I question why I'm there, not being a compliance expert. But when we look at this, it's really getting that comfort level that we are checking the box and providing that real-time integration to know that they are compliant. I have done that validation and authentication. I have asked those appropriate questions, and I've done so without sacrificing the digital experience and, as Ron said, forcing them to the branch to confirm it.
Yeah, Ron, did you have anything to add here? He's got himself on mute probably.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask Tracy a question. You know, there's plenty of banks, as we're talking about, that don't have that comfort level with digital account opening and so forth. But, you know, even for many that are doing it and are deploying some technologies and tools, they're not seeing anywhere near the results that they expect to. What's your take on that? What do you think they're doing wrong or perhaps not doing?
There's a couple things there, and it really does vary depending upon the actual implementation. But some of the key things that we see really tie back to the legacy challenge that Brett talked about. Things like opening disclosures and falling through that process, and when they display the disclosures, how they're communicating. When you think about, you know, banker speak or you know, like we like to say, banker jargon, customers don't think that way. They don't talk that way. And what we're finding is oftentimes that is, you know, making its way into the digital channel, and consumers are confused. And the second we're confused, we abandon. We abandon ship. It's very common for all of us, no matter what we're doing, right? We want immediate results. So we find that often is part of it. We see a lot of abandonment rates, Ron, frankly, falling out around some of those bank secrecy questions, around some of the disclosure areas. Another place that we see that is around still today providing those secure data points and really getting a comfort level, believe it or not, with the fact that they're secure. So ensuring that data is properly managed, that we're, you know, making the customer feel comfortable in moving through that flow. The biggest still is that particular bank jargon, you know, talking about things like backup withholding. That is not a normal term unless you're an accountant or maybe you work in HR. So that's some of the key areas where we see that fallout. The last thing I would say is not providing instant communication. So to your point, when I'm not able to do that quickly and efficiently, and I'm waiting, and I need to submit proof of residency or something else in the process. So that application is now pended, and in many times when that happens, that's not turned into a successful opening. So all of those things have contributed to those numbers moving down. Where we see success rates with our production clients in the 50%, is because they are closing the circle. They've got it all there. They're asking things in a customer-friendly way. They're collecting it in a digital way, and they're not pushing anything to the back office.
Yeah, and I know, Tracy, that you do a lot of user testing around the country, and I'd be curious to know, what kind of regional differences do you see? What kind of generational differences do you see? Gender differences? You know, especially the age, you know, are the stereotypes about older people not being as facile with technology as true as people like to make them out to be?
No, what we see in our testing, frankly, is not so much generational now. If you asked me that question, Ron, 2 years ago, yes, we would see less acceptance. That is starting to change as we move forward, like everything else. When you think about checking in at the airline, you know, several years ago, it was cool to go to the kiosk instead of the agent, right? Versus everyone waiting in line for the agent. Now everyone checks in, or the majority of us do, on our mobile device. We become more comfortable with technology as we use it, and we're seeing that generationally. We're even seeing that with things that we test, like taking a photo of your identification, even into things like selfie for facial recognition and compare. And that's becoming one that we've been doing a lot of testing on. Now, interestingly, that's the one that we see a little bit of gender specific breakdown. So we tend to see a little less from the female being able to take that selfie. And we'll continue to test that as we move forward. It's functionality that's becoming more, I would say, regularly available. Things that people are doing, taking college exams, as well as job applications. But generationally, we are starting to see that come together. I will tell you, and Ron, you and I've had this conversation, one of the biggest things that we see is related to convenience. Whether I choose to open an account on my mobile device or in branch, it doesn't come down to a device preference. It usually comes down to convenience. If that branch is close to me, I'm going to use it. And we find that a lot, and that could be a millennial, a Gen X, or a boomer. It doesn't really matter. It comes down to convenience versus always device, I would say, when we really get into why they're using different channels to achieve a banking goal.
Now, Tracy, when we talk about the partnership with the Endorse Solutions team and so forth. You know, how does that work as a gateway for you guys to start having these conversations, as opposed to you going directly out to these community banks and other financial institutions and trying to have the same conversation? Maybe Ed, you can comment on that as well.
Yeah, Ed, would you want to start? And I'll piggyback, because I think you can talk a little bit about the strength of, because you endorse solutions across the board.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And great question, Brett. I was kind of thinking about circling back to that topic. When you asked Tracy a few minutes ago, you know, kind of how you started down the path with ABA, she was pretty kind in that she didn't say, Ed sent me this really, really onerous RFP, which is exactly how the process started. So, back, just to use a quick example and tell you how we do this, we identified, working with an external consultant, Cornerstone, in fact, to look at all the providers in digital account opening 2.5 years ago. We identified 9. Two of them immediately dropped out. We sent the RFP to 7. 2 more took a look at the RFP and said, no thanks, and that left us with 5. And so each of those companies went through a remarkably rigorous process of answering all of our questions, touching on the things, a lot of things we just talked about, right? The compliance, the ease of use, the quality of the testing and updates, configurability, all those kind of things. And Zenmonic's solution rose to the top of that process. And we documented that to the degree that the NDAs and confidentiality agreements allow us. We documented that process in a couple of different reports that we make available to our members. So from that sort of basis of due diligence, right, taking that little bit of third-party management requirement off the desk of a banker and doing it for them and then handing it to them and saying, here you go, here's your starting point for evaluating the providers that you might look at, that is of tremendous value to our members. We did a recent survey where the due diligence process, the vetting of the potential partners that banks might work with, was the most valued thing about Endorse Solutions from our members that have used Endorse Solutions. So that's kind of the basis, the foundation of how we get to that endorsement point. And then, you know, we work really closely. Tracy and LG and I work together, talk a couple times a week and go to countless events, do lots of papers, do lots of webinars, you name it, to, you know, put the information in front of community banks that are in the process of evaluating where they might go in this space.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would add on to that, Brett, one for me, a huge benefit of having the ABA as a partner is being able to take that feedback from the member banks. You know, this is a crowded market with digital account opening. You know, it's a problem. It's a problem today for many reasons that we're talking about. But the member banks need to understand that we're not only offering them a solution that can open an account in 2 minutes, but we're offering them a solution that is checking the box for compliance, that they don't need to build in a back office process to support things because they're not collecting them in the digital channel and adding, you know, additional process and procedure there. So we're able to utilize and work with the ABA to really understand the challenges that they have being a smaller bank and not having huge back office teams to support those more complex or high-risk validations. There's a lot of value around that in working with the ABA there. So for us at Zenmonic, it has been instrumental in not only bringing our solution to these banks, but in us better understanding their particular challenges and needs.
And Brett, I'll just jump in with one quick anecdote that I told Tracy I was going to pin on her before we finished up. A couple of years back, ABA had its regulatory compliance conference, which is as dry as you would expect it to be. And it was, it's one of our largest events of the year. It's 2,200 people go to this event to learn about compliance and check the continuing education box across a range of topics. And I was leading a panel about payments compliance. And in selecting the panelists, I reached out to Tracy. And Tracy, you know, over the phone gave me that sort of, you know, tilted head. What are you talking about? Why
I thought you were going to say she groaned.
Yeah, well, she did that too, I think. She put herself on mute before that. But, you know, she did ask, she's like, I don't know that I've got a lot to add to a panel on payments compliance. And for me, and this is true across our membership, and I think one of the main considerations for banks looking at digital account opening solutions is the compliance piece is absolutely key. And for me to put together a panel of people talking about regs and technology and, you know, risk and, you know, managing ACH returns and all that kind of stuff without talking about how you open the account and make sure that the foundation of the transactions, the account, is compliant, didn't make a lot of sense. And so once I kind of explained that to Tracy, she was on board. She was one of the stars of the panel, to be sure. And at the end, it was a breakfast panel, if I recall correctly. At the end, at 8:15 in the morning, the line to talk to Tracy following the panel was 30, 40 people deep waiting to get some more thoughts from her on compliance in the digital account opening space. So, you know, I'm a process nerd. You've probably all figured that out. And compliance is a huge part of that. So that's, you know, Tracy's quite right to point out that our members have concerns about compliance, how that interfaces with a solution to open accounts on a mobile device. And that is something that Zenmonix has solved for very well and was a huge part of the RFP that we sent them and others a couple of years back.
I get that. You know, when in the early fintech period, so I'm going to say, you know, for Ron and I, we were involved in discussions like this, you know, in respect to fintech around 2009. But when we really started having these conversations, it was around 2012 to 2014, right? And in those days, more often than not, when you were discussing something like this with compliance and regulatory people, they would be telling you why they couldn't do it, not talking about how to do it. So, Tracy, in your experience, when did that sort of shift? When did it go from, you know, we're making excuses to why we can't do this, why, you know, branches are still the place for account opening, to, yeah, we recognize from a, we've got to figure out a way to execute on this?
You know, the reality is, I think these banks understand that they need to provide that capability. Younger generations, this is how they bank. It's not only how they bank, it's how they live. So it is becoming more common. And in fact, all of us live with our smartphones. So we're seeing as technology evolves that transition. The big thing I would say is that compliance teams just want to have a seat at the table. And we find the most success when we include them early on in the process. And they have a voice and they're able to see how this is evolving and moving forward. And, you know, they really can, you know, crush your dreams at the end in some cases. So we want to make sure that we always have that at the forefront. And we are, I would say, the last 2 to 3 years, it hasn't been a barrier. They're looking to provide the capabilities as well as the business owners now. So how can we work together to do it without sacrificing the experience? Now, frankly, it's still a challenge. There's some questions here in the States that we ask that, you know, do rub customers definitely the wrong way. As Ron said, we test across the U.S. Our user studies, we move into every market segment so that we can really understand, you know, do we see differences? And that is one area I will tell you is generally the same. Customers are very confused about, why are you asking me if I'm going to wire money or if I have someone who's politically tied to another country? I'm just trying to open a savings account. Why are you asking me where this money's coming from? So that is a very consistent response that we get. And we've spent a lot of time testing that and working with our production customers to find the best ways to introduce those questions in a much more customer-friendly way so that the compliance and bank teams are getting what they need and the customer's not feeling uncomfortable and leaving the application. So, it's working together. It's collaboration like anything else.
Yeah, actually, Brett, I want to jump in on that point, too, to just reinforce what Tracy was talking about. And Ed will like this as if he's the process nerd, because I think a lot of the problem that Tracy's talking about here has a lot to do with process design. And I think what's the problem is that, you know, to Tracy's point, what so many of the banks are doing is trying to design the offline process through the digital channels. And the offline process includes doing all of that regulatory and compliance work up front. But instead, you know, it takes a little bit of out-of-the-box thinking and to realize that we can take this process, chunk it out a bit, split it up, and really focus on getting the account open as quickly as possible and then doing the regulatory and compliance tasks that need to be done. I mean, generally speaking, the problem isn't for, you know, bad actors to move money in, but to move money out. And so get that account open as quickly and as easily as possible, and then do all the compliance stuff so that, for the vast majority of consumers who, you know, are opening legitimate accounts, it's done. But I don't think a lot of banks are kind of taking that process design view, and I think that's what's holding them back.
A progressive KYC approach, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ed, do you think there's an appetite for a sort of a more, KYC approach built on progressive approach to collecting customer information?
Oh, I think absolutely so. And you know, I've worked in fraud prevention and security and privacy on a couple different gigs throughout my life, and I've always been fascinated by that sort of layered approach. It makes the most sense. You do it in steps. Whether a red flag makes you take more action or a green light makes you speed up the process, but having a couple of different wells to dip into for validation and verification, be it the sort of traditional wallet process questions, right? What street did you live on in 1985 kind of thing? Having a differentiable flow, that's a terrible word, but I think it works, to rely on different resources to get that validation and verification, I think is a tremendously valuable part of the compliance piece. It gives you that KYC and alphabet soup requirement that you need. And that's a part of what we have to get across most clearly to those looking at these solutions, is that they're, a couple of them are fully baked in terms of the compliance aspects of the flow.
Great. All right. Well, let's just take a quick break. And then after the break, we'll hear from one of Zenmonics' and ABA's partners in this endeavor, a bank that's implementing this technology. And then let's talk about where we go from here with these sorts of issues in the U.S. Banking system. We'll be right back. You're listening to Breaking Banks. See you in a moment. Let's talk about finding freelance talent for your business or project. Finding the right freelancer can be time-consuming, frustrating, and expensive. Where do you go? How much does it cost? How can you be certain they'll deliver? Well, thanks to our newest sponsor, Fiverr, finding the right freelancer is no longer a struggle. Now, we've used Fiverr recently to do artwork and design for our Breaking Banks Europe launch, including a new logo that we designed. It was a quick turnaround, great pricing, and we were able to check the work that the freelancer had done before. So you can go to the Fiverr marketplace. You can look through hundreds of digital services that these freelancers offer, including graphic design, copywriting, web coding, film editing. You can search by service, deadline, price, reviews, and more. Take five and check out Fiverr.com, and you'll receive 10% off your first order by using our code BREAKING. It's so easy. Don't waste any more time and get the service you deserve by going to fiverr.com, code breaking. That's BREAKING. Fiverr, it starts here.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
With the Wealthfront Cash Account, you earn more interest on your money. They have one of the highest interest rates in the market at 1.78% annual percentage yield. That's 19 times more interest than the national average of 0.09%, according to FDIC.gov. It's easy and fast to get started. It only takes a dollar and a few minutes to open an account, and you can even do it right from your phone, no paperwork required. There are no fees, and your money is FDIC insured up to $1 million through their partner banks. Wealthfront's clients trust them with over $22 billion, and those clients have earned over $70 million in interest through their Wealthfront cash accounts. Wealthfront is the ideal way to manage your money. You can save, plan, invest, and get financial advice all in one place, and they make your money work harder for you. Right now, you can sign up for the Wealthfront cash account in less than 5 minutes by going to wealthfront.com/fintech. Go to wealthfront.com/fintech and start earning 19 times more interest on all your savings. That's wealthfront.com/fintech. Wealthfront is not a bank. Cash account is offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Wealthfront conveys funds to partner banks who accept and maintain deposits, provide the interest rate, and provide FDIC insurance. The APY is subject to change.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. Before the break, we were talking to the folks at ABA about their Endorsed Solutions program and Zenmonics. And we've got LG on the line still from Zenmonics. LG, tell us a little bit more about Zenmonics' customer footprint. Where are you guys located and where's your growth at the moment?
Today, we are customers having asset size from $250 million all the way to $120 billion in asset size. We are very uniquely positioned in the market from that standpoint because irrespective of what asset sizes, our product being utilized across the banks. There are certain banks uses only for online account opening solution. There are certain banks use only for teller. There are certain banks like our People United Bank today, they use us for not only online account opening solution, kind of extension of our platform today. So we have a double-digit customer footprint, not only North America. We're expanding to outside North America as well today.
Great. Now tell us, you've got one of the banks that you're working with us today at People's United Bank. So maybe you could introduce the guest we've invited on to talk about the Zenmonics implementation there.
Absolutely. We have Ravi Kachala on the call today. Ravi, he's an executive vice president for digital product management and instrumental in running the digital transformation with People United Bank. We have been associated with the bank more than 16 months right now. And now Ravi can talk about the People United Bank and introduce the bank as well.
Great. Ravi, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you.
So you lead digital amongst the operational aspects of the team and so forth. So what is what's your sort of day to day role within People's United?
Oh, I manage all digital, all product management, and all operations for the bank.
So what led to you guys looking at the account opening challenges and at looking at Zenmonics technology?
Yeah, so Brett, let me just start initially by explaining who People's United Bank is. Probably
please,
give some
please.
Context to the listeners. So we are a regional financial institution headquartered in Bridgeport, Connecticut. We are about $59 billion in assets, primarily a full-service bank. We have commercial, consumer, and wealth management divisions, mostly in all of the northeastern states except for Rhode Island. So that's our footprint today. And we have about 400 branches on the consumer side and about $40 billion in deposits and about $40 billion in loans off the asset side, roughly speaking.
Okay.
And in terms of your question about digital account opening, we've had digital account opening on the consumer deposit side for upwards of 6 years. That said, when we looked at the adoption and what our expectations were, and when we looked at all the customer behavior trend changing and all those things, about a couple of years ago, we decided that we need to put in a more significant effort in how we are looking at the application. We've changed our, we've brought on some significant skilled resources to the bank. And then when we evaluated the platform, it was around the same time where we were looking at our branch front end as well from a branch standpoint. So one of the reasons for us was of looking at a company like Zenmonix, while there were many other providers who were just specific to online account opening or specific to branches, et cetera. Zenmonix was one of the few providers who was, since we are already looking at them from a branch front-end standpoint, the same tech stack can be used for online account opening. And they were willing to work with us in all the integration points, et cetera, and keep it reusable for our branch employees and the customers and take care of all those things. So when we looked at the holistic stack standpoint and our ability to control the user experience and make enhancements much faster, those were all the various factors that we used in trying to select the provider.
So, go ahead. No, I was just going to ask you the question. How has this changed at the back office, the workload and productivity around account opening? You know, has it shortened account opening time? Has it, can you handle increased volume now? You know, what's the implications of the fact that you've put this in place now?
So we are able to do about 4-minute account opening right now. The main value proposition, I would say, is the increased online integration points and validations that we were able to put in place and the decreased back office manual review, right? And that's the main value proposition of what we've got. And the value was that as opposed to taking a product and just deploying it, we've looked at the entire workflow, and along the way, we were able to make changes based on friction points we've noticed with the customer. We were able to go back, work with Zen, and adjust them.
So it is an end-to-end process now, fully automated, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And so, how do you expect this is going to change the future growth of People's United? What are your expectations
in terms of
digital acquisition? How do you think this is going to change your ability to serve customers?
Oh, significantly. Based on customer experience, we are actually seeing that not just in the consumer deposit space. We plan to expand this into the small business deposit account opening space. We've already making investments, and we've done in the credit space as well with certain other providers. So overall, we believe the percentage of customer acquisition that we do through digital will significantly increase compared to the traditional customer increase. And we're already seeing that in some of the other products. And we're actually seeing, since we deployed the solution last July, steadily we have seen increase in the number of, it's still not where we would like it to be, but we have seen a steady increase pretty much month over month since the day we deployed the solution in terms of the digital deposit customer acquisition.
Great. Now, if you were advising other banks in the space, and I know that's unlikely because, you know, they're your competitors, but having gone through this process yourself, what was really critical in terms of a successful implementation in respect to your team's preparation, your technology stack? What were the critical elements of being able to implement Zenmonix solution and get this these improvements you've been seeking?
Sure, I can take a shot at that. I would say it's very important to think about your KPIs and metrics on what exactly are you going to measure and what defines success. That was a key part of it. And never underestimate the value of having your banking domain subject matter experts and not just the software team, right, on the product side. The other big thing I would say is bring in all your stakeholders from compliance, operational risk and assurance to the back office operations team. Have them all be part of the implementation. Do a customer-centric design thinking workshops. Work through those things. And anything that you do in terms of the increased work of evaluating upfront will make your scale later easier and much less number of rewrites, if you will. So yeah, that would be my advice. Have your key team, have all the stakeholders, and make sure you understand your metrics and plan for them, not as a day two, but as part of your key project requirements.
Now, we've talked about online and we've talked about branch account opening. Are you guys, have you guys extended this to mobilers yet?
It is mobile. That is the primary thing that we've done. This is not about, I mean, we haven't done the branch yet. What we have done is the mobile account opening first.
Okay.
We believe that mobile is the key. So that's the first thing we want to lead with.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Well, Ravi, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks and giving us an update on the Zenmonix implementation.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So our thanks to the team at People's United for joining us and talking about their successful implementation on this stuff. So that brings up, when we talk about where we go from here in a compliance and regulatory environment, one of the things we hear a lot of talk about right now is, you know, China's had some incredible success, albeit with some real questions around civil rights, using facial recognition payments. And so, you know, a few years ago, we used to characterize the battle between the East and the West as QR codes versus tokenization of the magnetic card. And as Ron was talking about in his article in Forbes the other, last week or so, in respect to the Plaid acquisition by Visa. Gosh, it's all about the data and so forth. But we do see this trend in two of the largest economies in the world, in China and India. We see an effort to create centralized identity ecosystems rather than having banks and governments and healthcare providers all independently having their own identity databases with all of these breaches going on. So, how far away do you think the we have sort of a de facto, system in the U.S. around social security numbers, but how long before the U.S. says it's not an efficient mechanism to have all of these different banks collecting all of this identity information and having disparities and having potential risks of exposure of that data?
Well, I got to thank you, Brett, for giving me the question that involves social rights and justice.
we've got to talk about it sometime, right?
Right. You know, that's a great question, and something I ponder on a pretty regular basis is, you know, the changes in European banking laws, right? As I do compliance conferences and things like that, you know, I wonder, when's that coming here, right? When's that coming to the U.S.? A big part of me thinks it won't. There is, you know, a certain sort of independent nature to sort of the American fabric, if you will, that really shies away from that centralization of information, although look at how much we've centralized our lives in Facebook, for example. It's really hard for me to say, you know, when I think that's coming, if it's coming. There's a lot of efficiency to be gained from that sort of arrangement. There's no question about it. But ultimately, you got to put somebody in charge of the data, and that tends to make people a little bit nervous.
Yeah, well, I think it does, but we should be nervous about breaches from all of these other databases as well. So, and for inclusiveness, one of the core problems in the U.S. for financial inclusion is just the fact that people don't have a passport or a driver's license to get a basic bank account. So having some sort of national ID schema might solve that. Ron, I don't know what you think about this, but, one of the issues you've got in the U.S. is we tend to sort of want the free market to address this rather than enforce standards like GDPR and the sort of mechanisms that we see in China and India, right?
It's funny, just like you asked the social question, you asked me the free market question, you know me well.
I remain convinced that a firm like Amazon's going to get into this space. You know, they're already in with the cloud. They are going to be a technology provider to many retailers already. And I see no reason why they would not do the same in the banking industry and do that through a digital account opening process, do the KYC, take care of all the compliance stuff. They can acquire a firm like Zenmonix or somebody like that and get into this space and become much more of a provider. So I think that the free market is going to address this to a certain extent and avoid the governmental approach, which I think in the U.S., just like Ed was alluding to, has some problems, not just from a cultural perspective, but let's put it this way. There's little trust in the government today, and if there was a shift in administration, there would be just as much mistrust of the next one coming in. So I remain convinced that we'll see a free market attempt to this, and I think the Googles, Apples, and Amazons of the world are going to be the best, not maybe the best, but certainly going to be one of the first to try to fill that void.
Now, Tracy, you guys use some artificial intelligence and some, you use selfies in the process. So how important is things like identifying the individual by their behavior, heuristics, or by biometrics to sort of the ongoing integrity of the system?
It's becoming more and more important, not just for verification and authentication, but for banks to be able to offer the experiences that consumers want. That's where we're headed. Think about it in all of the other aspects of your life and how that works today. So that is something, to Ron's point, there's a reason why big tech is coming into banking. It's not that we have a shortage of banks here in the U.S. It's because there's opportunity there to improve it. And that's clearly an area for us. You know, right now we've been focused on utilizing particular technologies like that to help us improve the authentication and verification process, but the goal is to move that behavioral validation process forward and to truly be able to offer customers banking experiences that just aren't those age-old traditional checking products, right? And Ron talks about it a lot. There's a reason why consumers move their money out of the bank, and it's to find other experiences. So this is going to become more and more important as banks continue to fight to survive and to keep their customers.
All right, so to wrap this up, because we're running out of time, let me just ask Ed and Tracy, let me ask you a question. If you were a CEO of a mid-size, a regional bank, a community bank facing some of these issues, what would be your top three hygiene points right now in terms of the digital transformation that you'd be looking at?
I'm going to toss that to Tracy while I think about it.
Don't even think about throwing it to me.
It's a tough one, right? And it really comes down, it starts with the culture at the institution. So when we talk about digital transformation, it's all about that culture change first. And it comes into play with a lot of the things that we talked about today, legacy, embracing new technology, all of these things. It's really that culture change first. In order to solve the problems, we don't want to create new ones. We want to meet our goals, but we've got to think about things differently. And digital transformation starts there, whether you're talking about account opening or anything else. So for us, that's the first piece, is really having that mindset in play. So if I was a CEO, it's ensuring we've got the team empowered and we're thinking differently. The second piece is not just replicating the account opening experience. It's how do we make things better? How do we improve it? And not just in the digital channel, anywhere a consumer would choose to look at the process. If I come into the branch, I don't want to be there all day. I want to have an efficient process there if I do it kiosk or mobile. So looking at improving those layers. And lastly is extending it, frankly, outside of account opening. That's just one step. And when I make that selection, I don't want to just, you know, create a point solution that only solves that problem. I want to be thinking about what the next step in my journey is for digital transformation. What do I need to tackle next? And have I laid the foundation to do that?
Great. Well, I think that is probably a good point to end on. So, Ed, how can ABA members and others find more about the Endorse Solutions practice?
A couple of great ways to do that. One is to go to ABA.com, and across the top of the page, there's an opportunity to select any of a number of different tags there, and industry tools will lead them to Endorse Solutions, and there's plentiful information about Zenmonix and other endorsed solutions in there.
And they can connect with you personally on LinkedIn, right?
Absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn. I think I'm listed as Edward Gross as opposed to Ed Gross, but obviously one and the same.
Okay. And Tracy, how can we find more out about Zenmonix?
Zenmonix, of course. You can visit our website. You can contact my, I'm probably easier to find on the web than LG, right?
True, true.
You have to spell his name first, but you can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter as well, and Zenmonix on both, and LG, of course.
Absolutely. And Ron, what are you going to write about on Forbes next? Well, you don't know yet.
I'm going to write about personalization. I'm going to write about China versus the U.S. fintech. I'm going to write about a whole bunch of stuff, and just published something today on mobile deposit. So
right.
Go check that out.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks all for joining us on Breaking Banks. You've been listening to Breaking Banks. We are the number one fintech radio show and podcast globally, with almost 7 million unique listeners in 178 countries. If you're out there right now, tweet us out, shout us out. You can do that at @BreakingBanks1 on Twitter. You can reach to us on Facebook, on Instagram, on all the social media channels that are out there. And of course, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or Podcaster or Stitcher or wherever it is that you download the show from, if you're listening via those means instead of on the AM band across the tri-state area in the US, in New York. Otherwise, have a great weekend, guys. Thanks for joining us again on Breaking Banks, and we will see you again next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.